Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
This is an official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat as heard every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on Breakfast with Taylor. On RTRFM 92.1, we cover new cinema releases and new streaming releases. We cover, well, two different types of films here. And it's almost like between the art house and the multiplex, but between, you know, the stately drama and the bang bang shoot 'em ups. That's what we're doing with this episode. And well, to start off with, we'll look, you know, to talk about the second film first. This is a film that I didn't see, but for some reason had no real compulsion to see. But you took the bullet here and saw Sam Mendes' film Empire of Light.
That's right. I did watch Empire of Light. A bit like you, I didn't know anything going into this film except that it was about a cinema.
Yeah.
The poster doesn't even have the cinema on it. It kind of just has Olivia Colman's face on it. So I was compelled to see it because I didn't know what I'd be up for.
Mm.
And as you'll hear in my review, I don't know if that helped or hindered my experience of the movie, but we both did see in cinemas John Wick Chapter 4, which is the first movie that you take a look at, Tristan. And, you know, you say the stately drama versus the bang bang shoot 'em up, but is not John Wick Chapter 4 a stately drama?
The stateliest of dramas. I mean, it is like amazing, and we talk about it as well, but the solemn tone between some of the non-action sequences, you know, there's a wry sensibility there, but it also feels like, you know, just a strange, surreal way to stitch together these dynamic action sequences. But yeah, definitely one that we were both looking forward to and spent more time talking about, which is, yeah, Keanu Reeves returning in the lead role of John Wick with John Wick Chapter 4.
Same goodbyes?
Saying hello.
You think your wife can hear you?
No.
Then why bother?
Maybe I'm wrong.
You're going to die.
Maybe not.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend.
A new day is dawning. New ideas, new rules, new management.
We've known each other since we were 9 or 10.
Who is this?
The Marquis de Grammont.
Challenge him to single combat. Win or lose, it's a way out. I don't sit at the table.
Your family does.
Please pray for me.
We find ourselves again at 7:30 on a Friday morning with the Movie Squad here to help you maybe make a choice about what it is that you'll see at the cinema this weekend. The people who guide us, like the cinematic tour guides they are. Tristan, good morning.
Hello.
Simon, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Taylor?
Very good. A lot of responsibility, folks. Mm. The cinematic tour guides.
Yes.
Wear it with a badge of honour.
Of course, you know, it's like people are wandering out from the rain and they're checking into a spot where no harm will come to them, and we're there at the at the desk, you know,
yes,
ready to get them to check in and just not be touched by any other kind of marauding, you know,
Tristan,
people out there.
Are you suggesting, and I'm just pulling this out of nowhere, but we're perhaps some sort of continental hotel that the world's assassin could find refuge in times of stress?
I do think the Movie Squad's segment is like consecrated ground. Like, people are safe here, so they can check in and know that they'll get a good recommendation and no harm will befall them.
Mm. Yeah, a good recommendation, which sometimes results in you not going and seeing a film, but that's also what we're here to do. And by we, I mean Tristan and Simon. Tristan, we are going to start this week. Simon, were you alluding to this film? Is that why you said all
yes,
of this weird
And that was
stuff?
A test, Taylor, because you and I had a conversation in the parking lot a few weeks ago where you said, do I need to see John Wick 1 to 3 to understand chapter 4. And I said, no, but you should still watch them anyway. And I'm guessing you didn't do that homework, Taylor.
I did not. Tristan, please tell us all about John Wick chapter 4.
Yes, so, yeah, referencing some of the interesting dynamics of the world in which John Wick takes place and the new chapter of a book that you can use to hit someone in the throat with is John Wick Chapter 4, which is out in cinemas now. And we have Keanu Reeves returning to this role of John Wick, a.k.a. the Baba Yaga, the retired assassin who in the first movie took revenge on criminals who stole his car and killed his dog. And basically, he in turn, laid waste to about 100 people in that movie. And it's followed his journey as this kind of hunted assassin in this bizarre world of that there's a secret organization called the High Table that organizes all these assassins. And like what we were talking about before, there are hotels that you can check into and you won't be hurt by any other assassins. It's an assassin for hotels. We've heard of a hotel for dogs. This is a hotel for assassins. So now, we've talked about this earlier, Simon and I, in terms of this was something that we were looking forward to seeing this year. So I can already, you know, presume if you're telling Taylor to watch all the movies that you're a John Wick fan.
I am. And I remember seeing that first John Wick film and, you know, didn't really expect a whole lot from it and realized, oh, okay, this is basically an American riff on The Raid, which is a great Indonesian martial arts franchise. But it did have that unique twist about the lore of the John Wick world. It wasn't just, you know, Death Wish. It wasn't just a one-man getting revenge movie. There seemed to be this mythology behind it. And then by the time you got to Chapter 2, which is still my favorite in the series, it was this large Baroque melodrama, and it would just expand in scope and kept expanding with number 3 and expands still with number 4. And I do love these films because they are great action films, great martial arts films, but they have this insane mythology to them. But it's still very clean, and I don't feel like it's getting lost up its own butt. I still kind of know what's going on in this world.
Well, it's interesting because I think with the first film, because it's directed by, it was co-directed by Chad Stahelski and the other person. David Leitch, who went on to direct Deadpool 2. But there were stunt people. And basically, it was kind of like getting back to basics. I think following on from the kind of the wave of imitators to the Bourne Supremacy identity movies, Paul Greengrass, director style, where like the editing would cut up the choreography so much that you couldn't tell what was going on. So I feel like with John Wick 1, they were like, we want to make a movie where you can see the action, you can see these stunt guys, much like, yeah, the Indonesian film The Raid. And you've got a great hero in Keanu Reeves, who worked with these people in the Matrix, the original Matrix trilogy, and is very game to just, you know, go for it and work with these stunt people in kind of these ongoing scenes of either, yeah, gung-fu, fisticuffs, and then just, you know, knife fights. It's these movies are a lot. And then what you were talking about, Simon, they do kind of take you into this world, which is very solemn and a little bit silly, but I enjoy that part of it. I think some people like will critique the world building, but I'm a fan. I was just thinking about like the screenwriter who writes the dialogue for a John Wick movie. I mean, what a job, because these people say things like there's a villain in this movie who says to Keanu Reeves' character at one point, you know, you're a killer. You're not a normal man. You're a killer. And I'm like, there's about three movies where this has been established, and I think he's reconciled with the fact that he is a killer. Like, they make no sense, the things that these characters say.
No, but then you've got John Wick, Taylor, right? Yeah. And again, well, I want to get into why you haven't watched these films, but you've got this character, John Wick, where they just keep reducing the amount of dialogue he says.
Yes.
And so you've got these villains giving him these long monologues and these existential digressions, and then Keanu just go, yeah, and that's pretty much it. But I do think that the tongue is planted firmly in cheek. But Taylor, John Wick 1 came out in 2014. It's been 9 years. No judgment, but why have you never gone, tonight's a John Wick night for me?
I don't know. I was talking to friends about this last night at dinner, and I said, we're going to talk about John Wick 4 tomorrow, and have you guys seen 1 to 3? And the response was, and maybe this is why I haven't watched it and I didn't realise, is that the one where he just keeps making movies because they killed his dog? And so I have to wonder, like, maybe I, like, had heard about it in 2014 and just was like, oh, yeah, parked it. And now there's four of them and I feel like I just haven't caught up.
Taylor, I want you to relay this message directly to your friends. What a disgusting oversimplification of the John Wick franchise.
Well, I mean, it is a hard thing to get over in the first one, particularly for friends who, you know, people who love animals. No one likes to see the dog
get
killed.
I actually see the dog die. That's horrific.
But, like, that happens in the first one, and then...
The dogs get theirs. Yeah. The dogs get theirs. Don't worry about that.
In all the other movies, there are dogs who don't get killed and who... kill a lot of people in turn. So there's a lot of revenge for the animal lovers out there. But look, we're dancing around. So this is chapter four. And this movie is like, I had to laugh when this was announced. This is like a near 3-hour movie. But I was looking forward to it because I'm a fan of the previous three, like Simon. But yeah, at the end of the last one, John Wick was left for dead. He was betrayed by his closest associates or allies throughout the franchise. And basically the setting was that he was going to take revenge on the High Table, this kind of holier-than-thou mythological bureau of assassins that have all these kind of arcane rules. Like, they have these gold coins that can... It's a very flexible currency. You can use this coin to get a body buried or take the taxi ride. Anyway, so in this one, he is, like, out to get these the High Table people, but it all gets simplified in that he has to fight one person, played by Bill Skarsgård from Pennywise the Clown from It, and recently playing a normal person in Barbarian, but here with an accent that it took me 40 minutes to realize that he was French. But he is hamming it up, and it's a pure delight. I was really laughing a lot during some of his monologues that he gives to other characters who are not Keanu. And so, yeah, you just get 3 hours of Keanu kind of going from city to city. Each hour is another, it's from Osaka to Berlin to France, and then all these great action set pieces that are, you know, I mean, it's an overwhelming film, but I had a blast. And there's a great cast, including returning people like Ian McShane, who played the concierge from the previous movies, Lawrence Fishburne as the Bowery King, the king of this... another kind of cadre of assassins who are all homeless. And then we have Donnie Yen, Hong Kong action superstar legend, as a blind assassin named Kane who is tasked to kill John Wick. And we also have Hiroki Sanada, a great actor who was supposed to be in number 3 but is now in number 4. And his daughter is played by pop star Rina Sawayama, which is, you know, if you're a fan of the music, you get to see her do her thing in this film. And yeah, there's a lot of characters, some would say unnecessary characters, but I enjoyed it all. I'm already a fan, so I'm going into this, but I was surprised that even with the length of the movie, I was still kind of on board for all of it, really. Simon, were you anticipating the franchise falling off at any point? Were you dreading this next one?
No, but I probably thought that, you know, 2 was a high point for the series, and because it has that operatic Baroque flavor to it. 3 kind of returned things to the gunplay of 1, and I was sort of less interested in that. It was less visually interesting, I think, that film, and became a bit, you know, pardon the pun, like deadening with the volume of kills in that movie. And it just wasn't as imaginative, I felt. This feels like a real best of, where they've taken the best of each of the prior movies and employed it in those different acts. And I think it is a return, not a return to form, because all of them are really good, but I think it is up there with the second installment. It has that big operatic flavor to it. I love the new additions to the cast. Donnie Yen is obviously amazing, but he's really fun and has probably the best laugh lines in this film. Rina Sawayama is fantastic. She's really good in this film, not just as an action hero, but as a performer. And I think the biggest mark against the movie is that she disappears for a significantly, or too long, basically. Just she's gone for too long. But Tristan, you also failed to mention Scott Adkins.
Oh, yes.
The legendary action star who dons a fat suit to play a German poker playing. I don't really know what he was, actually. He's sort of a mythological creature in this movie. But that is a standout sequence. And it just looks beautiful, this movie, Taylor. Like, I can't convey this. I know you're like, yes, boys, okay, this sounds very nice. But it is...
like a strikingly made franchise. And it was 3 hours long. I probably nodded off for about 6 minutes, I think. But I awoke refreshed and ready for what the rest of the movie had for me, because it was really that compelling and beautiful. So I really liked it. But Taylor, I don't know, has this converted you in any way?
I'm not opposed to action movies. Yes. I actually quite like action films. And I think that I just needed the glowing review of Movie Squad to finally push me over the line. So Tristan, I will be seeing John Wick Chapter 4 after I see the first three. In cinemas now?
Yes, in cinemas now. And so, yeah, I mean, look, you could, even I, as a fan of these movies and what you're talking about with Chapter 3, it can be a bit overwhelming. Like, there are, like, we just think, oh, this is fantastic action choreography, and it's going on for 30 minutes. I mean, sorry, like, it's sometimes too much of a good thing. But, yeah, the references in this film, it's obvious that the filmmakers, they wanted to put all the films that inspired them, like, from Lawrence of Arabia to The Warriors. So it is a feast, and it's also a nice farewell to character actor Lance Reddick, who passed away recently, who had a lovely role throughout the whole series. So it's great to see him one more time in John Wick Chapter 4, out in cinemas now.
All right, let us know if you're a John Wick stan. Have I offended you this morning by not saying it? I'm sorry. 0405-921-921.
Look around you. This whole place is for people who want to escape. People who don't belong anywhere else.
How do you feel?
I do feel a bit numb, I suppose.
The world is changing.
Wow.
You can't reverse it.
Another world.
Happy New Year!
You can't just give up. Don't let them tell you what you can or can't do.
Tristan and Simon are with us. Simon, we're going to change pace now and talk about Empire of Light.
That's right. This film came out in cinemas last week, and it's the latest from director Sam Mendes, who people will know, obviously, as the director of a bunch of recent Bond films like Skyfall and Spectre. He also made 1917, a World War I movie a couple of years ago that was, you know, purported to be was made to look like it was shot in one single take. And I really enjoyed that film. But going back a bit, he started out with American Beauty, won the Best Director Oscar for his debut film, then made movies like Road to Perdition. And has this filmography that suggests, you know, a guy who started in the theatre but has a real handle on the craft of cinema and on making spectacles, even if the movie itself is meant to be a sort of small in scale character piece. And that's what he's made with Empire of Light, which is set in the early 1980s in Kent and follows just a handful of characters working in a cinema. And primarily it looks at the duty manager, Hilary Small, played by the great Olivia Colman. Now, Taylor, are you a fan of Olivia Colman's work?
I think so.
Olivia Colman was the star of The Favourite. People will also know her from The Crown. But going back, you know, Tristan, you must have been a fan of Peep Show.
Yes.
You know, has starred in so many British comedy shows and series and serious movies like Tyrannosaur. I'm trying to think. She was in The Lost Daughter, of course.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Olivia Colman?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's great. And I was just thinking about that the other week about, yeah, that some actors, particularly British ones, you might have seen from a comedy show or a drama. And then, yeah, to get to the point where she's always been kind of liked and acclaimed, but in recent years has, yeah, really leapt to being kind of more internationally known and kind of respected and getting bigger roles, not just simply in like 6-part BBC dramas or whatever. So it's great to see her career kind of, yeah, flourish in that way. So, yeah.
Well, I always remember when she won the Oscar for The Favourite, she had this beautiful and endearing speech on the stage where she was like, well, this is never happening again. Like, but she actually has entered that rarefied period that some actors go into. It's sort of like the Meryl Streep zone, which is no matter what kind of, you know, film they're in, good or bad, they kind of end up in the awards conversation. And she has been since nominated for two additional Oscars, I believe, with The Father and The Lost Daughter. She wasn't nominated for Empire of Light, but she is excellent in this movie, playing, like I said, a duty manager of a beautiful cinema in Kent, but she's a lonely woman. She has some mental health issues that she's dealing with, and they're sort of left vague early in the movie, but she's living a lonely, very small life. She's having an affair with the owner of the cinema, played by Colin Firth, and it's not exactly a romantic affair. It's a fairly transactional one at that. But her world does open up a little when a young black man, played by Michael Ward, who people may know from the Small Axe TV series, specifically the Lover's Rock episode. He joins, his name's Stephen, and he seems gentle and kind, and basically Hillary introduces him to an abandoned cinema screen upstairs in the complex that is basically hollowed out and open to the environment around it. And it's a beautiful kind of set piece, this area. And just through conversation, getting to know one another, they do form an unlikely romantic bond. But she then becomes privy to the prejudice he faces from the skinheads in town. And all these forces are potentially converging around a planned world premiere of Chariots of Fire that this cinema has snagged. And maybe even Paul McCartney will be in attendance, as Colin Firth promises. Now, that's the premise of Empire of Light, but it is very much one of those, and I apologize for the groan that's about to come from everyone. It's a love letter to cinema, Tristan. It's a love letter to the movies. And there are some frustratingly trite tropes here about the fact that Hillary, she's the duty manager at the cinema, but she's never seen a movie in the cinema. She can't go in there. That's for the customers. I work out here. Now, I'm not saying that Perth 2004 is the same as Kent in 1981, but I know for a fact that in 2004, if you worked at a cinema, you could go in for free because my cousin took me to see Vertical Limit. Now, I'm not saying that story is more interesting or heartwarming than Empire of Light, but it's a conversation. Now, this is a fairly boring film, but I really wanted to meet it more than halfway. Yeah. Tristan, I know you haven't seen it, and I've got more to talk about, but what's keeping you from Empire of Light?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I mean, I'd heard, like, look, when the trailer first came out, it did look striking, particularly because it's Sam Mendes working again with cinematographer Roger Deakins, who's one of the greats. He's worked with Denis Villeneuve on Sicario and Prisoners, Blade Runner 2049. He just makes things look great. And it looked very, like, opulent, even though it was kind of like this sort of working-class movie. But, yeah, something about seeing another movie where you have the kind of cinema parody, so shot of someone looking up at the screen with their face in light. I was like, we've already had The Fabelmans. We've already had Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It seems that we've had a succession of these movies that are a love letter to cinema. And I think it's a bit more complicated than that. Sometimes movies are obviously great and can provide, you know, a lot, but I don't know if they're the only answer, particularly if... You know, I didn't know this detail that she had never watched a movie before, which is, yeah.
I don't know if she's never watched a movie before, but she makes the point not gone into the cinema, which is bizarre to me. But yeah.
Tristan, you make a really good point there, and I wanted to ask Simon, these love letters to cinema films, the ones that we've talked about recently is Empire of Light and Fablemans, which neither of you gave massive glowing reviews to. What's a good example of a love letter to cinema film?
A good movie. Like, and I'm sorry, like that's ultimately what it is. And what I think is interesting, at The Fablemans, you know, when it worked, it was actually really good, but I just thought it was an okay movie overall. This movie has a beautiful performance from Olivia Colman and a really interesting romance here. And I'm not saying that a movie that's just a flat-out romance is boring, and I know I'm putting a target on my own back by literally raving about John Wick Chapter 4, which is 3 hours long, before going into Empire of Light. But there's a quote that Roger Ebert used to like go to a lot, the critic Roger Ebert, when a film was striving for something and didn't quite get there. And he used to say, this film knows the words but not the music, right? Which I thought was a beautifully poetic way to kind of capture that indefatigable kind of magic of movies, you know, knowing the words but not the music. I think Empire of Light knows the music but not the words. So I think they've got all these fantastic artisans, production designers. The cinematography, which was Oscar nominated, is stunning. The score is by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, but it is really beautiful as well. It feels like a movie. They're all working in concert together, but the script is terrible, and it's so trite, and at every point it kind of hinders the good work being done elsewhere. And that if you watch it, you're like, I'm watching a beautiful movie, but why is it not hitting me? Like, why is it not capturing that magic X factor that I get from a beautiful, simple movie? Let's talk about Drive My Car, these character chamber pieces, romances. You know, how do you make that thing happen? And it is a bit of a mystery, but the elements here are in service of a script that I just think is severely lacking, unfortunately. Taylor, I don't know what, when you're sitting down, do you enjoy a romance? Do you enjoy a straight ahead drama? It's sort of a style of film or genre that has fallen out of fashion somewhat.
Yeah, it's definitely not the first thing that comes to mind for me when I know that I'm going to sit and watch a film. I hadn't heard of Empire of Light, but based on sort of the synopsis that you give, like, it should be really great, and it does sound like something that I'm really interested in. But hearing that it falls flat, I'm curious to see if I feel that way while watching it, and maybe it's something that I will track down to compare our notes. But no, it's not something that I often tend to lean towards.
Well, I'd love to hear if anyone has seen it, because it came out last week. We're coming to it a week later. Please share your thoughts. Obviously, I'm sure it'll hit different depending on, you know, your personal experiences. And there are a lot of there's a lot going on in this film, but then also not enough. And I want to know if it resonated with anyone. It just didn't land for me. I'm having a hard time putting my finger on why, but I'm pretty happy blaming Sam Mendes, who was the sole screenwriter here. And I do wonder if he had, as in other films, you know, worked with someone else. Christy Wilson-Cairns co-wrote 1917, but he's solo on this one. You know, why is that emotional element just not, you know, punching through? Again, that's the magic of movies. Some of them, for whatever reason, the alchemy is there and it just makes you feel something. But this one, sadly, left me a little cold.
All right. Empire of Light, it is in cinemas. It was out last week. In John Wick Chapter 4, they could not be any more different. But
the alchemy of cinema is in John Wick Chapter 4.
According to Simon. Let us know if you're off to see either of these. 0405 921 921. That is Movie Squad. Tristan and Simon, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can always play catch up with the Movie Squad podcast as well, extended conversations over at the RTRFM website.
Well, there you go, Empire of Light. I don't know if I'll catch up with it. There's something about... yeah, I mean, when Taylor was asking that question about the cinema, the magic of cinema, or films that are about the magic of movie making, knowing that the climax took place during the opening of Chariots of Fire, I just suddenly thought of Inglourious Basterds. And that's a film about the power of movies, but is definitely more entertaining than I would assume the premiere of Chariots of Fire, which I've never seen. I mean, I love the Vangelis score, but it's not a film that I would say stokes the excitement or the imagination.
Well, and this is where I'm trying to, you know, Tristan, and I know you and I famously are ultra macho, hyper masculine alpha males, right? Yeah. But I'm trying to make sure that, you know, when I go, well, Inglourious Basterds did it well because they shot all the Nazis in the cinema. I want to have that space for a film like Empire of Light, which may climax around Olivia Colman watching a movie and that be satisfying. But then, you know, I cited Drive My Car earlier, and that was for a reason. I think that's a beautiful movie about, less so much a romance, but about the power of art and treating it seriously and not like it's, you know, a nice to have.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was much more successful in that way than Empire of Light. The only other thing I want to say about Empire of Light is that there is a subplot about ska music. and that's kind of it.
Yes.
I feel like that has to be cited. But otherwise, I'm not expecting, you know, fans of the Specials to be flocking to Empire of Light anytime soon.
Yeah. Like, I think we didn't talk about it, but I mean, I've liked some films that Sam Mendes has directed, but I always get the vibe from him, and particularly with some of the collaborators, that what you were saying before, that Roger Ebert quote, like knowing the words but not the music, that he can put together something that looks visually compelling or has these kind of ideas and themes, but there's something a bit hollow or doesn't feel as felt. Like, I even think of films like, you know, Road to Perdition or Jarhead, which he made kind of after American Beauty, which both have their moments, but always I never really returned to, because it was just something flat about
them. Something,
yeah.
And similar to Christopher Nolan, it's like, why are these films like... No one in history has ever cried during a Sam Mendes or Christopher Nolan film. I feel pretty confident saying that. But why is that? And that goes back to that sort of, in like, what is the je ne sais quoi of their movies versus the movies that make you really feel something? And it's so hard to articulate that. But I do feel like that is that remove, and maybe it is that focus on the technical. Like, you can always feel the machinery behind it. But... and Fabelmans looked at this as well. Machines make movies.
Yeah.
That's how the movies are made. So, you know, this is definitely entering the realm of the theoretical as to why you might feel something. And maybe we should cite that the fantastic Zine VHS tracking that Tristan produces recently talked about movies that make you feel and why.
Mm.
Hard to explain, hard to distinguish, very personal, very individual. But Sam Mendes, I think, is still reaching for that movie that really resonates with audiences in that way.
Yeah, it was an interesting comparison to Christopher Nolan, because I think I think what he has at the very least is that he, you know, there's that stateliness, but like he has these strange, like he will follow these like weird ideas or obsessions, where I don't think Sam meant, like the more times I watch Tenet, the more I love it, because it is just like...
How many times have you watched Tenet?
I think 3 times
Whoa,
now.
Whoa, okay.
But the baffling folly that the movie is all about, and just like, it doesn't feel like Sam Mendes would ever make that jump of going, look, I'm just going to I'm gonna base this movie on this wacky idea and take it really seriously, which is part and parcel of why I enjoyed Tenet a lot, probably more than I did when I first saw it. But also, I'm sure is a factor about why we enjoy the John Wick movies. It's something that we were kind of bouncing around in the discussion, is that because I've read some, you know, reviews and some people kind of go, oh, it should get back to the simplicity of the first John Wick, which was kind of, I mean, and that was part of its appeal as well, that it was a very simple story, an almost comically simple story, and that particularly the dog is so lovable and cute. It's just like, this is like a cartoon, you know, but it was treated gravely serious, even though there was a lot of comic, you know, energy throughout the film. But yeah, the kind of the building of the world, introducing these characters, some of which seems connected to kind of franchising and spin-off and all these things that are in the pipeline, but is also part of what, like, I think that's what the series, some of the joys of the series, is its convoluted nature.
Absolutely. And what I loved about 2 was that it really stepped out into the world, and 4 recaptures that. And, you know, you don't want to go into too much detail around it, but basically it feels the premise now is that the entire world is a facade for assassins, right? Like, literally everyone you will ever encounter is an assassin or is extremely comfortable being around assassins having a gunfight. And there's a hilarious scene in 2 where I think it's Common and Keanu Reeves are going down escalators, shooting at one another, hiding behind their Kevlar suits, and everyone around them is not even distinguishing it. And there's a similar scene here where a rave continues while an extremely violent gunfight is happening. And I find that quite just amusing, this idea that the entire world has this shadow world of assassins.
That's a very funny scene, a couple of funny scenes to bring up. But, like, yeah, in Chapter 2, the idea that they have to hide being assassins in this gunfight during the subway platform, when the last scene has this moment where, like, the character played by Ian McShane kind of, like, snaps his fingers, and it's like... It's like a deadly, what do they call that? Like, everyone stops in the town, in like the city square.
The sleeper cell has been activated. Like, everyone in the world is actually a hitman.
In New York, in this public square, everyone just stops. And it's just like, well, everyone, so what does it even matter? Like, everyone just seems to be assassins in this world. But yeah, I did love that me and my partner Sally, we're enjoying the performances of the dancers during John Wick Chapter 4 in this Berlin nightclub. You can just really see that they're just like, these dancers are fully into it. It's like a music video.
Yeah.
But everything's going on and no one like, everyone's just like, they're locked into the zone. They're just doing their dancing. They can't care.
You know? I really loved as well. We get to see a bit of the inner workings of the Osaka hotel in this film that's run by Rina Sawayama and her father, whose name escapes me, the actor. But this scene, like, you're reminded, like, oh, yeah, you're running a hotel. Like, 99.9% of the time, you're running a hotel. And even the kitchen staff is like, oh, actually, guys, can you get ready to have a massive fight? And like, yeah.
Like, at one point, she says, get the guests out discreetly. I was like... I mean, that's very nice, but aren't they all assassins? Like, shouldn't they be able to take care of themselves? But, like, you know, that's part of what I enjoy about the films at this point, is that they've kind of created this world. And, it's a tribute. I mean, it is a tribute to cinema and a lot of the references that happen in John Wick Chapter 4, from the match cut that starts that references Lawrence of Arabia to The Warriors to the kind of, for a few dollars more, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, the spaghetti Western vibe. Even from the first film, where the nightclub that he goes to is called The Red Circle, and even referencing like the kind of more pretentious 1960s French, you know, Le Samurai and The Red Circle. So, you know, there's an obviously a love of cinema and this type of movie making here. But it's also like also a love of video games, since it seems to just like come up with these side quests and these.
Oh, and there's a top down gunfight and fight scene, which looks like Grand Theft Auto 2. It was just incredible. Tristan, we got to talk about it. Massive flashing spoiler warning. Do not listen to the next few minutes if you haven't seen John Wick Chapter 4.
Mm.
We're giving you that grace to leave now.
Yeah.
But for those who have seen it, we have to talk about the revelation, quote unquote, at the end of the film where John Wick dies.
Mm.
Question mark. Now, I've learned that in the John Wick franchise, unless you see this guy, because remember, John Wick will kill someone dead and then go back around and do headshots to finish the job, which is part of why this is so brutal and sometimes unpleasant. Is John Wick coming back?
Well, that was an interesting thing, because I was reading, you know, in the Wikipedia, they talk about how originally it was supposed to be John Wick 4 and 5 shot back to back. But in the end, they just kind of like made one movie. And from the impression I get, they're happy to kind of just like chill for the moment. But yeah, I think even though you see his gravestone, yeah, definitely like the door would be open. And I like the fact that it ended that way. It feels like a nice button to the series, if this was the last kind of John Wick movie that Keanu Reeves did, particularly because he's such a trooper. You kind of feel like he looks so exhausted as he's getting older as well, that you're just like, yes, he should just rest and just like, you know, let them do, you know, they've got Ballerina with Ana de Armas is the next John Wick spin-off that will apparently come down our way. And then there's this whole talk about a Concierge TV series. Continental.
Did you stay for the final scene?
I did.
Okay, I did not. Tell me, but I've read about it.
Yes.
So the premise being that Rina Sawayama might have her own revenge in some form.
It's almost too complicated to get into, but there's a moment that feels a bit like a nod to, you know, Kill Bill Volume 1 and the kind of idea that, you know, like, yeah, the child will get revenge for the death of their parent, and this is like a subplot that is dangled throughout the rest of the movie but is only kind of resolved in this post-credit sequence. But they also play it in the way that, like, you get the setup, but there's actually no follow through. So it feels like it all could, you know, much like a Marvel movie, this could be just like a teaser for its own movie, you know, which I'm sure, you know, like, but on the basis of their performances in this movie, I would love to see.
Absolutely. And then John Wick in 10 years' time, the haggard mentor, like, for whatever reason, ballerina, yeah. Rina Sawayama, I'm down for that. But this guy ain't dead. So I'm sorry, Tristan. This guy ain't dead. You don't get him that easy.
It would have to, yeah, like, it's funny when you talk about these movies. It's like a horror movie or something like that. Like, you know, massive spoiler for Halloween Ends. But the way that they had to prove to everyone that Michael Myers was finally dead was that the townspeople got together and took the body to a rock crusher. Like, you know, that would have to be the level that John Wick would have to suffer because, or you know, and the great thing, that you know, the comic thing about the film as well is that he suffers so many times. Like, he would have died so many times over and over again, but he's like the Energizer Bunny. He keeps going on and on. Like, he jumps out of a window at one point, and I thought, how is he going to break the fall? And he hits a van and smashes to the ground, but then he gets back up. He's got to go up there. I mean, and you talk about the stairs scene. I mean, that's just like a whole metaphor for the whole series, I feel like. The Sisyphean ordeal of just getting kicked down 212 stairs to get back up.
Yeah. Well, I also like the idea that John Wick could be this extension of the sort of solipsistic, you know, theory of like, well, how do you know you're not immortal? How do you know you're not the one who will live forever? And maybe this guy could be the guy. Yeah. So, look, we'll report back as soon as we know more about the John Wick franchise. Tristan, always fun to talk movies with you, good or bad.
What a pleasure. And thank you again, Simon. Thank you again, Taylor. And thank you for listening. And please share, subscribe, rate, review, and pass on the word of the Movie Squad, the safest movie review podcast in town.